Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastha Gurudeva Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschacchadesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 64, Verse 36.
Rajano Raja Lakshmyanda.
Rajano Raja Lakshmyanda.
Anatma Pata Vichakshate.
Anatma Pata Vichakshate.
Nirayam Yevi Manyante.
Nirayam Yevi Manyante.
Brahma Swam Saru Balisha.
Brahma Swam Saru Balisha.
Rajana Members of the kingly class. Raja, royal. Lakshmya, by opulence. Anda, blinded. Na, Duna, Atma, their own. Hatam, fall. Vichakshate, foresee. Nirayam, hell. Ye, who? Abhimanyante, hanker for. Brahmaswam, a Brahmana's property. A sadhu, as appropriate. Balisha, childish. Translation: members of the royal order, blinded by royal opulence, fail to foresee their own downfall. Childishly hankering to enjoy a Brahmana's property, they're actually hankering to go to hell. For many years, as there are particles of dust touched by the tears of generous Brahmanas who have dependent families and whose property is stolen, uncontrolled kings who usurp a Brahmana's property are cooked along with their royal families in the hell known as Kumbhipaka. Whether it be his own gift or someone else's, a person who steals a Brahmana's property will take birth as a worm and feces for 60,000 years. I do not desire Brahmana's wealth. Those who lust after it become short-lived and are defeated. They lose their kingdoms and become snakes who trouble others. My dear followers, never treat a learned Brahmana harshly, even if he has sinned. Even if he attacks you physically or repeatedly curses you, always continue to offer him obeisances. Purport: Lord Krishna offers this instruction not only to his personal associates, but to all those who claim to be followers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as I always carefully bow down to Brahmanas, so all of you should likewise bow down to them. I will punish anyone who acts otherwise. When a Brahmana's property is stolen, even unknowingly, it certainly causes the person who takes it to fall down, just as the Brahmana's cow did to Nirga. Purport: the Lord here demonstrated his instructions are not theoretical but practical, as seen concretely in the case of Nirga Maharaj. Having thus instructed the residents of Dwarka, Lord Mukunda, purifier of all the worlds, entered his palace. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the 10th canto, 64th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Deliverance of King Nirga. So this whole section is spoken by Krishna to explain why King Nirga became a lizard. And of course he expands on that by glorifying the Brahmanas in general and indicating that everyone should offer them respect. So this is a principle of the Varnashram system. And the population in general, all of the other Varnas should respect the Brahmana, and particularly the Kshatriya has to respect the Brahmana. So of course we know that in the Varna system, the Brahmanas are at the top, and they are supposed to be sattvic in nature and learned in the Vedas. And the Varnashram system operates because it has this spiritual class of people to give advice to the whole society. If that class is not there, the system becomes material, very material. And the king himself will be more inclined to exploit the citizens for his own good rather than act for the benefit of all persons and for the Supreme Lord. Of course, we know that the Brahmana in general is simply defined as one who knows Brahman. So Brahman is a general term. It could just mean you're the Atma or that the Brahman is supreme, etc. It does not necessarily indicate a Vaishnava. So that is why in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya distinguishes the Brahmana
who is Brahmana in name, and then above that, the Brahmana who's actually learned and practices the Vedas properly, and then the Vaishnava. He distinguishes the Vaishnava from the Brahmana. Though some of the Brahmanas are Vaishnavas, even if a person is not a Brahmana, but is a Vaishnava, he's put in a superior class to the Brahmanas because he knows and accepts and worships the Supreme Lord as the ultimate goal. So therefore, the Brahmana as a class is respectable in the Varnashram system. But yet, higher than that whole system is the Vaishnav, Bhakti, worship of the Supreme Lord, etc. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, higher than the four goals of Varnashram, Artha, Dharma, Kama, Moksha, is the fifth goal, Prema. And it's distinguished from any member and Varna of the Varnashram system. So the lower classes are involved in Artha, Dharma, and Kama. And of those, the Kshatriya has to enforce the Dharma and follow those rules very nicely. And the Brahmanas are those who are striving for moksha, or liberation. So this does not include bhakti and prema. So that is why he says the fifth goal must be prema. And then the person who practices that is the Vaishnava. Therefore the Brahmana is glorified within the system, but actually even greater than that is the Vaishnava. Now, of course, within that system, we can have Vaishnavas, Sudra Vaishnavas, Vaisha Vaishnavas, Kshatriya Vaishnavas, or Brahmana Vaishnavas. But then we don't classify them anymore according to Varna. They lose their significance. And to classify them as a Brahmana Vaishnava or a Sudra Vaishnava or a Vaisha Vaishnava is considered to be aparad or offense, because we're looking at external Varna by birth or by qualities, but we're not looking at the devotional aspect. So we have to see the devotee only in terms of the devotion, not in terms of what particular birth he has or what activity he is doing. And to do so, if we look at the externals, then, and we consider higher a Brahmana Vaishnava is higher than a Sudra Vaishnava, then we commit offense. In this way, though the Brahmana is glorified, actually the Vaishnava is even more glorified. So in several places we'll find the glorification of the Brahmana, as in this case. Of course, other places are, when talking about the Kumaras, they are Brahmanas, etc., and they got angry at the gatekeepers, so they're Supreme Lord, there he glorifies the Brahmanas again. So yes, they are glorified, but in other places we'll find how the Vaishnava is glorified without regard for his Varna or caste. So of the two, the glorification of the Vaishnava is even greater. Nevertheless, there's also respect that is due to the Brahmanas in the Varnashram system. And of course, we find that the whole Bhagavatam describes a society ruled by kings who institute Varnashram system throughout the whole day of Brahma. So we have 14 Manus and their descendants who establish a Varnashram system with a king. So it is a prominent feature of the human population throughout the days and lifetime of Brahma. The Bhagavatam describes that, and it describes the different Manus. So they are obligated to institute the system, and the kings have to set a good example. So therefore, they also have to give respect to the Brahmanas. So here we find so many verses talking about how the royal order, the members of the king and the members of his family and his dynasty, they have to give proper respect to the Brahmana and not take away his properties and steal from him or whatever, or insult him in any way. Because that is the system. the Brahman is given respect, even if he commits sinful activity or this or that or whatever, still he's given respect. So that is because this is part of the whole Varnashramic system. And of course, that applies not only to the kings, but the other members as well. They have to respect the Brahmana. And this goes on throughout the day of Brahma and the lifetime of Brahma. Simultaneously, we have most of these kings being great Vaishnavas. They are the original Manu, especially, is empowered by the Lord. He's called a Vibhuti of the Lord. So he not only instills Dharma, but also sets a good example of bhakti. And therefore, we have many great kings described who were coming in Manu's line, who were great devotees. We find Ambarish Maharaj or Dhruva, etc., all great kings. And even we have Shaktivesh avatars like Prithu Maharaj coming in the line from Manu. So, in other words, we have the king setting a good example of bhakti as well as dharma. Because the population in general is more interested in artha and kama, the king emphasizes this in his administration of the kingdom, how to satisfy the people and at the same time make them follow the rules of dharma for the population in general. At the same time, within that system, there is some bhakti. They must worship the Supreme Lord. But their main interest is to live in this world and enjoy it nicely, comfortably, raise their families comfortably. That's their main purpose. So therefore, they're given this whole system of dharma with the kings. And those who are also great devotees and understand higher purpose in life, then they will follow the principles of bhakti. And the king also encourages that, as we see in the case of Dhruva or Ambarish. So they are both given their place within that system. So sometimes we see the system of Varnashram is glorified, and here we find the position of the Brahmana glorified by Krishna himself. But we should not think that this is the highest glorification. As I said, the Vaishnava is even more glorified because he has come to the position of bhakti. So, in general, the system is intact, and therefore the kings respect the brahmanas, and simultaneously they perform bhakti. And of course, even Krishna sets a nice example of bhakti by respecting the Vaishnavas like Narada Muni when he comes to the palace, etc. However, sometimes the Varnashram system becomes weak, and that whole degradation of the system and the loss of the qualified king is described in the ninth canto of Bhagavatam after Krishna. What happened after Krishna, not so much ninth, but the 12th canto, describes the decline of the kingdoms also, and the bad qualities of the king. So we find a whole description of decline as our particular Kali Yuga progresses. So that means the kings are no longer ruling according to dharma. There's no line of Manu. And the last descendant of Manu is invisible. He's not there. He's hiding in the Himalayas. And he will not manifest himself until the next Satyayuga. So it's a long time. We got, 400,000 years where there's no king. So therefore, the Varnashram system is not protected or not nourished, is not maintained properly because there is no empowered king to do so. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, the system loses its structure and its power and its qualities because there is no proper leader. But in spite of that, the highest process can go on. That is the process of bhakti. It survives in all cases. It does not depend on a king to institute it. The Varnashram system depends on the king to institute it and keep the people under control and to give respect to Brahmanas and make sure that they're taken care of so they can remain without anxiety. But that's not there in Kali Yuga. Still, though there is no king to set an example of bhakti, bhakti can go on. And how is that? Because bhakti is maintained not only by kings, but by devotees. That's how devotees preach bhakti, and bhakti can go on. It is not so for the Varnashram system. It needs a king there to establish the system and make it operate. But bhakti doesn't need a king to set an example of bhakti. We just have devotees practicing bhakti, and process goes on. So in other words, this does not need a social structure at all to be practiced. Whether there is a social structure or not a social structure, it can go on. And that's what we see happening in Kali Yuga. By and large, the whole Varnashramic system has been destroyed and there is no king. There are remnants left. But no king is there to really institute it in a serious manner. Nevertheless, bhakti can go on. Of course, it is not that only bhakti in Kali Yuga. Bhakti has been there in all yugas. But in other yugas, the king is also doing bhakti and enforcing it. But in Kali Yuga, there is no king to enforce the bhakti. But it can go on because of the devotees. And whether they are have a varna or not, bhakti can be practiced. The Varnashram system operates with varnas. You have to be in a class, a Vaishya, Sudra, Kshatriya, or a Brahmana. Bhakti doesn't even require a class. You can be outside the Varnashram system and practice bhakti also. So therefore, it's a very flexible system that survives even if the Varnashram system is not there or it's in a very weak state. Therefore, it continues in Kali Yuga from the other yugas. Bhakti continues. Whereas the Varnashramic system starts declining in Kali Yuga, becomes very, very weak. Because even now there is no king's line left. So, emphasis is put on the process of bhakti more than the Varnashram within the Bhagavatam, with the realization that bhakti continues in Kali Yuga, whereas Varnashram system is not there because the king is absent. Ideally, of course, there should be a Varnashram system because through that system, everyone gets their maintenance and they don't have to worry too much about that. They work nicely and they get their survival for themselves and their family, which is what most people want. So that's not there in Kali Yuga, so everyone has to struggle and be in anxiety all the time about where the money's coming from and what occupation to follow, and then you switch occupations because this one's not so good, etc., etc. And you always have to worry about the future. So in that sense, very unfavorable in general materially. Now, of course, there's a relationship with bhakti also. If there's more material problems, you get distracted even in bhakti. But of course, the higher you go in bhakti, the less disturbed you are by the material conditions. Those who are beginning may have a lot of problems because of material considerations, because the faith is not so strong. So it is preferable that you don't have to worry about the material body and whatever like that, and just do your bhakti. And that is why the combination of a Varnashram system with bhakti is also very good. But in Kali Yuga, wishful thinking is not going to produce a Varnashram system because there is no king, and the prediction is he's not going to be available until next Satya Yuga. So it'd be very difficult to maintain such a system. So in spite of the difficulties and the disadvantages of not having that system, still we can do bhakti. But we have to concentrate a little more on it because there are so many distractions in the way. So we do have to persevere in the process of bhakti because the system is not there. A favorable social system is not there. So we have to persevere a little extra in order to do the bhakti. Nevertheless, we can be successful. So therefore, at the end of the Bhagavatam, it says that the good quality of Kali Yuga, even though it's full of faults, one quality is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So all the different types of bhakti, the chanting of the holy name is considered to be the easiest and the most powerful. And therefore, this is what is advised for Kali Yuga. People may not be able to do the other types of bhakti because of so much disturbance and irregularity and whatever. But everyone can chant the name of the Lord. And in that way, they can practice bhakti. So that is why Nam Sankirtan is recommended. So this is recommended not only this Kali Yuga, but in all the other Kali Yugas, 999 Kali Yugas also within one day of Brahma. This is the Yuga Dharma for those ages because of the lack of a social system. So we have the easiest process of bhakti to follow. Whereas in Satya Yuga, process of bhakti is dhyana, meditation on the Supreme Lord, which requires concentration of mind. So in Satya Yuga, everybody was highly qualified. They were all peaceful minded, they were all very sattvic. So they could it's very easy to control the mind. When you get to Sattvagun, then you can be a Brahmana and practice Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, etc. So very easy for the people in general. So that's why the process in Satya Yuga is Jnana. So this jhana is a type of bhakti. It's not impersonal meditation or yogic meditation. It is meditation on Supreme Lord using Vaishnava mantras like Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, but it's meditation. They don't even do deity worship. It's meditate on the Lord in their mind. How they can do that? Because they're very sense controlled. They have no desire for material enjoyment, etc. Because that's the nature of Satya Yuga. Very sattvic. But not the process in Kali Yuga, because people's minds are always disturbed. They're short-lived. They can't practice properly. So many disturbances, etc. So dhyana cannot be done. But Nam Sankirtan can be done. So that becomes the main process in Kali Yuga. So though it is advisable to have a varnashram system, still, if it is not there, we can still continue with the process of bhakti. Whatever remnants of varnashram are there, yes, you can practice. But nevertheless, we're going to get our main results spiritually from the process of bhakti and Nam Sankirtan and Kali Yuga. Well, in some sense, yeah. In any case, the Brahmana should be respected. We can't say because the system is not intact, we can insult the Brahmanas and steal from them, obviously. We try to maintain whatever is left of that system as much as possible. And we give respect. Of course, the other problem is that most of this is only by birth now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brahman by birth. But even then, he says, even if he's not qualified in any sinful activity, you should give him respect. So the principle is there, whether the system is intact or not, we should respect.
But the situation becomes very dangerous. We don't know whether something is a Brahman or not Brahman, and then if by mistake something happens.
Well, we have another principle. We respect all living entities. That's also one Anga Bhakti. Don't disturb any living entity. That's another principle. 20th Anga Bhakti is don't disturb other living entities. So, and of course, the 10th Anga is also, it's the 10th, 9th or 10th, anyway, that we respect the Brahmana, the Aswata tree, etc., the cow, etc.
Whatever the yoga, we see that there should be love of God should be there, some active Yeah.
So how come then we say that only in Kaliyuga it is more easier and much more beneficial to the human beings?
In Kali Yuga, there's no other option. We only have bhakti as the main process. There's nothing else there. The Varnashram system is weak, and it's very difficult to revive because there is no king, and he's not going to come to next Satyuga. So therefore, an extra emphasis put upon the process of bhakti in that case, because of the, it says it may not be easy, because of all the disturbances and a lack of a social system. Huh? But nevertheless, there's no choice. Kali Yuga. And to make it a little easier, then we have the process of Nam Sankirtan.
I find most of the places in Vedic literature, the name word Brahmana is used, Vaishnava seldom used. Namo Brahmanya, word Daitya, Kamal Brahmanas. So Vaishnavas are not directly used in the Vedic literature.
In the?
So in Vedic literature, you see our Shastra. Many Brahmanas are used. So we can take that Brahmana to the Vaishnava depending on the usage.
In some cases, but in this case actually it's concerning Brahmanas, and he had two Brahmanas, so obviously it's Brahmanas in this case. In some cases we find the word Vaishnava used, or Bhakta or whatever like that, just to distinguish the Bhakta from the Brahmana. So it depends on the context of the particular word, where word is used.
You say that Vaishnava,
you
say Brahmana,
right? Yeah.
You don't tell us Brahmana.
Well, probably within the regular Varnashram system you can call that. It's actually a sin. That becomes a sin to disrespect the Brahmana. So within, we call in our terminology, we use aparad for sins in relation to devotees, process of bhakti, and Supreme Lord, things related to bhakti, and we call it aparad. This is basically a sin, but it's in relation to a devotee. So we have a sin in relation to a brahmana, the same sin becomes aparad in relation to a Vaishnava. How can there be a structure within the society of devotees without a Varnashrama? Well, within devotees, we can have some sort of structure. We won't call Varnashrama as originally or as normally designated here, as we find by birth they are Brahmanas or whatever like that, because it is an offense to consider a person to have a Varna. And designate Vaishnavas by Varna. So in that sense, we cannot have such a system. Nevertheless, as is often remarked by Prabhupada, it's natural to have people who are intelligent and intellectual, and those who are managers, and those who are workers, and those who are good at making money. So these are natural in any society. We'll see that whether they have a Varnashram system or not. Of course, we can call it an Asuric Varnashram in that sense because it hasn't got Krishna consciousness in it, or even the idea of progressing to Sattva-guna in it. But those classes are there. So within the devotees then, yes, people have to survive somehow or other. So they need maintenance. So in that sense, you must have Varna. You must have an occupation. And the occupations are going to fit into different things, whether it's labor occupation or money-making occupation or managerial occupation or not. Now, those occupations may be directly involved with the devotees as managing devotees, or it could be managing a bank or managing a whatever outside, working for the government or whatever as a kshatriya instead, or in the army. Then you may be a devotee living in the society. So you may have an occupation outside in the regular society, which is, we can say, is a Varna occupation. Or you may have an occupation within the society of devotees also as a manager. But that's a little more rare because we don't have a system which is self-supporting for devotees. Now, we could have in the future if we get enough devotees, but this may require a separation from society at that point. or you live in this group and not within society and isolate yourself. So this is a little problematic in one sense, because then you're not preaching anymore. You're just operating within your own group. So there are problems in instituting that system of, you know, a separate society with its own varnas, etc. Some groups, religious groups, have done that. They've isolated themselves from society. Christian groups in America and other places in Europe. They're living in the 17th century still. They use horse guards, and, you know, they plow their fields with oxen, whatever. Now they use tractors, but still they separate and they don't interact with the rest of the society. And they have, you know, the elders who are like the brahmanas, and they have the workers and the thing. Most of them are farmers, actually. So it's more like Vaishyas and Brahminical kind of things mixed. Not so much Kshatriya and Sudra within that. But technically, the Vaishyas are also doing Sudra work, I suppose, at the same time, because they're in the fields as well as doing the field work. So, and kind of a remnants of a varnashramic system within that group, but they isolate themselves from society. Now, the problem in the modern world is all the kids go out of the system. They get influenced by the internet and, you know, communications or whatever, so it tends to weaken the system a lot, because people start going outside the system. And now, if you're deliberately interacting with the outside world, then it really creates a problem, and maybe the system will fall apart, that isolated system. So there are problems in instituting it, and I don't think ISKCON has solved that problem for the society of devotees. But a lot of the rules cannot be followed, because they are very strict rules of Manu Samhita, for separation of the varnas and this and that and whatever. And even they have different rules, but they don't follow all the regulator principles, the lower varnas. Only the brahmanas follow the four regulator principles in one sense. So it's quite a different varnashram system from the Manu's varnashram.
Sometimes Manu says even the devotees, they perform all the, one devotee perform all the varnas duty, like sometimes they perform the Vaishyas duty, sometimes Sudra, sometimes Shuddhi, sometimes Brahman also.
Yeah.
He's performing all the deeds of the other varnas.
What, devotee?
Yeah, devotee.
Yeah, devotee can do anything according to the situation. Now, of course, his main activity should be activities of bhakti, hearing, chanting, association of devotees, worshipping the deity, etc. That's not brahminical or vaishya kshatriya. It is transcendental, nirguna. And things related to that are also nirguna, even though we may say it's a managerial position or a labor position or whatever. If it's serving the Lord, it becomes nirguna. It's no longer, you know, material, whereas the varna activities are related to gunas. Tamagun for sudra, like this, and sattvagun for brahmana. But when a devotee studies, he's not a brahmana. He's not doing brahminical activity. It's transcendental. It's not sattvic. So it's a little bit different. We shouldn't think of them in terms of the regular varnas.
Sometimes we use the, like, you know, outside people, like mentalistic people, to in the temple service, like in the temple.
Yeah.
It's a sudra work.
Yeah.
So what benefit do they get?
Well, in that they are serving the deity in some way, even if they're taking money, it's also beneficial for them. They get some association with devotees, they see the Lord, etc. They may take prasadam, so they get benefit from that.
But they are taking, but
even if they take money.
Yeah,
but we also give devotees money. It depends on their consciousness, of course. Yeah? They may have a devotional consciousness if they're sweeping the floor or whatever. They may have just, I'm doing it because I get money. In any case, they still get some agata sukriti, even if they're just doing it because they're doing it for the temple or whatever. And accidentally, they may do some good act for the temple, so they also get benefit.
But to explain that regarding this leader in Kali Yuga, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, there is a leader, and after some time, and even Kali mentioned that, you know,
it's not mentioned, but particularly this Kali Yuga, we know it is there. It may not be for the other Kali Yugas, because it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, the different dynasties in Kali Yuga, but this particular Kali Yuga is definitely not there. And in all Kali Yugas, definitely the sin increases, so we can assume that the that system is not so strong in Kali Yuga. Because in all Kali Yugas, there's only one quarter Dharma left. So what's the king doing?
question that can
be very weak, in other words.
Lord can empower the moon already. Normally, moon is empowered with a lot, so he can establish the same. But why doesn't he do? He do it in Kali Yuga. Somebody Kali Yuga, he reject the Yuga. It's Kali Yuga.
Well, you can ask the Lord why he does it like this, that's all. But maybe just to show that bhakti survives in any case. It's not dependent on the Varnashram system, to illustrate that.
If the Shastras are clearly mentioned about that, there will be no king rest of the Kali Yuga, then what basis should a Prabhupada want to establish Varnashram again?
Well, that's what we have to, the problem, it's problematic how to institute that instruction. It's a problem how to institute it, and different devotees have different ideas. At best, it can be a resemblance to some aspects of Varnashram, but it can't be a complete Varnashram system, obviously. But certain aspects or principles. And Prabhupada in different places says different things. And I say, okay, Varnashram, chant Hare Krishna. That's Varnashram. Like that, even he says. So, and other maybe follow four regulator principles, maybe is Varnashram, whatever like that. But he never went into details about how to establish a Varnashram system for the public at large. Because that means then you have to have a new political system, etc. And how are you going to do that in the present, unless you revolt and take over the government by force or something like that? I mean, it's very difficult to do things like that in the modern world. So what he meant actually is problematic. Or some people say it's only for the devotees. Others say it's for the external society. So controversy about that even.
And there is no Varnashram, no kingdom. So in this Kali Yuga, we can see so many branches of devotion. Like they are presenting man-made God, and some devotees like worshipping Krishna or Lord Shiva. Like that. So who will ensure or who will stop other false theories?
What's that?
Who will stop the other false theories or promoting the man-made God?
So well, the devotees have to preach and explain to people what is scripture. That's all. They're the only ones that can do that.
Kali Yuga, there is no qualified brahmanas mentioned. So what type of results will be getting performing rituals through like these brahmanas?
Well, we can say that because we're trying to follow the scripture, we get that benefit, whatever it is, even if they're not so qualified. You get some benefit, not every benefit. Just like we have various types of devotees. So you can serve any devotee, but if you serve a devotee of a higher nature, then you get more benefit. And if you serve a lower type of devotee who's got less devotion and less purity, still you get some benefit, but little less.
The devotees are expected to perform the rituals, or they need not perform the rituals?
Theoretically, they don't have to, because by worshipping Krishna, everything is taken care of. You can perform them, definitely, to set an example that people should continue with some aspects of Varnashram and Dharma, etc. So that can be done also. And it's done in most cases. We see that the Acharyas also didn't break those principles, so they followed also. But they're not attached to them at the same time. Yeah. Yeah, so there's qualification for doing bhakti and chanting, but it is not qualification by varna or anything like that. It's simply based on devotion. So therefore, the devotee should make people qualified by giving them devotion and humility, etc. Then they can practice bhakti. I don't know how that would operate, but we do have Sankirtan, which is a group of devotees. That's preaching. That's collective. Sankirtan.